I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, when regular jobs can't be found or don't pay all the bills, many Americans turn to the so-called shadow economy, which is bigger than you might think. We'll talk about that in our conversation about personal finance just ahead. But first, we want to turn again to how the government is paying its bills or not. We're talking about the sequestration. Those are those across-the-board federal spending cuts that went into effect several weeks ago. They forced federal agencies and employees to tighten their belts. But most Americans have not yet felt the pain of those cuts in their everyday lives. That's not true in Indian country, where sequestration is already squeezing health and education programs for some of the country's most economically vulnerable people. To tell us more about this, we called Amber Ebarb. She is a budget and policy analyst with the National Congress of American Indians. She's also a member of the Tlingit people. Also joining us is Lacey Horn. She is the treasurer of the Cherokee Nation. Welcome to you both. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Amber, I'm going to start with you because I think most Americans do know that Indian nations, for the most part, have their own sovereign governments. So why are federal cuts hitting them so hard? And are there in particular areas?
Yes. As you mentioned, education and health care, these are treaty and trust obligations. The role of federal spending is really rooted in the treaties that were signed by our ancestors with the federal government. So the underpinning of all federal spending is fulfilled in certain programs in the federal budget, and they have been long, historically underfunded in every range of governmental services from law enforcement to healthcare delivery to infrastructure development, economic development. And this is because tribes often lack a tax base to raise the revenue to deliver these services. So although these services were guaranteed by treaty and signed in contracts, they have never been at parity with the rest of the population.
Well, give me, though, a sense of how big the federal imprint is in terms of the funding. Let's say with most public schools, for example, the federal government picks up, let's say, roughly 10% of the budget of public schools K through 12. So what about in Indian country?
Because there's a lack of a tax base for Indian reservations, there is a program, Impact Aid, which supplements funding for Indian reservation schools. The top 25 districts nationally here are most reliant on federal funding are on or just off Indian reservations. And Impact Aid helps relieve these kinds of shortfalls. So there will be a $60 million cut in Impact Aid, which will directly affect 700 schools and services, and these will affect 115,000 Native students. Because these are not forward funded, like most schools, these cuts will be coming down fairly quickly. Decisions about teachers versus transportation costs will have to be weighed, and neither of those are really good cuts to contemplate.
Well, when you're saying forward funded, we've talked about this before with school officials or with people who cover education more broadly. When you say forward funded, most schools, if they're going to feel the impact, they're going to feel it next fall. What you're saying is that schools in Indian country will feel them right now.
Right.
Well, let me turn to Lacey here. Lacey is the treasurer of the Cherokee Nation. This is on your plate. Can you give us some example of some of the kinds of decisions that you are contemplating and that other tribal leaders are contemplating right now to address this?
Well, this is a conversation we've been having here at the Cherokee Nation since August of last year. So we've been watching this and we've been planning for this. And at this time, we're undertaking cost containment measures to try and absorb the impact as much as possible before jobs and services are cut back. We're implementing a hiring freeze for all non-essential positions. We're canceling travel and trainings. We're delaying or foregoing any capital acquisitions, both large and small. And we're looking at our encumbrances to see if there's any changes in scope or quantity that we can make and strictly enforcing employee overtime. We're also waiting to get agency clarification on how these cuts will be applied. And we're getting ready to start our budget cycle for fiscal year 14. And we're starting the process of beginning the determination of the overall percentage reductions that our programs will have to make across the board. They'll have to build in their FY 14 budgets and take that into account. So, you know, we're trying to absorb this to the greatest extent possible before we start making reductions in jobs and services.
Could you give us an example, though, that people might be able to understand kind of just sitting in their own living rooms?
Sure. Diabetes is a serious issue in Indian country, an epidemic, really. And Cherokee Nation is fortunate this time to have grants through DHHS to educate young people about prevention, provide necessary treatment. Right now, we have a 23-year-old girl. She's a high-risk diabetic, 33 weeks pregnant, and she's in a tertiary care hospital. You know, her kidneys are functioning poorly, and her family is worried sick. And also worried sick is her, you know, 3-year-old child that wants its mama back. And sequestration will have such a devastating impact on Cherokee Nation's ability and all tribes' ability to help very sick people.
We're talking about the impact that sequestration cuts are having on Indian country. Our guests are Lacey Horn of the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma. Amber Ebarb is with the National Congress of American Indian. She's also a member of the Tlingit Nation. Amber, can you give us some examples of things that people sitting in their living rooms might understand?
So another education priority for tribes are tribal colleges. So these cuts will be coming down. And these are really important to Indian country because they're culturally accessible to tribal students. A lot of young people who go off to college don't fit in culturally when they move to a big city from a reservation or tribal land. So tribal colleges fit a huge role, play a huge role. And we got some stories from some of the tribal colleges, and the Fort Peck Community College is remote in northeastern Montana. They would be forced to close its community-based wellness centers and eliminate its GED and adult education program and extracurricular activities for students. And as you know, many reservations have high poverty and not very many economic opportunities, so this could trigger a domino effect. Since American Indians have higher high school dropout rates and higher mortality from diabetes and liver disease and others. So because many tribes are reliant on federal sources as opposed to other revenue sources, this will have a disproportionate impact for Indian tribes.
One of the things, though, I think people still might not understand is this was debated for months and people saw this coming down the line. Was there any effort? I mean, Lacey started talking about this, but Amber, I'm going to ask you this sort of more broadly. Was there any effort to meet this challenge ahead of time? And again, why now? Why is it that the public schools, for example, the schools are being affected by this right now?
Right. This has been a long-running challenge, and we saw it coming for a long time. All politicians did. And it was never intended to go into effect. The sequester was meant to be a deterrent and to force a compromise, and we haven't seen a compromise. And so once again, these promises and obligations, which are funded in the discretionary side of the budget, are cut up in a larger political debate that is difficult for Indian people to influence because of our small numbers and remote locations and our political power. We tried to raise these concerns, the situation of the Indian Health Service in particular, as it should be exempt from the sequester altogether, we believe, because it's a treaty obligation. But it's been difficult to make that case with Congress, which this is such a large political battle about the role of the federal government in our nation and what it should do. I mean, it's hard to raise our case to a level that can be pulled out of this political debate.
Lacey, you were telling us before we started that the pain of these cuts will be felt beyond the borders of reservations. How so?
Cherokee Nation has such a significant economic impact on northeastern Oklahoma, which primarily is very rural. A recent study revealed that Cherokee Nation and its subsidiary businesses have a $1.3 billion economic impact to the state of Oklahoma. We have that impact by buying and contracting locally. We also give of our tribal funds locally through donations and unrestricted gifts to schools, communities, counties, local law enforcement, and nonprofits. Cherokee Nation tries to be a good partner in our communities. However, when the nation is forced to restrict its spending and its hiring, it will have a direct impact on the local economy, and it will send an already depressed rural area into greater depression.
Can you talk a little bit more, though, about the point that Amber was making, is that while a lot of Americans will feel these cuts later on down the road, like, for example, say public school systems who are hiring next year, she was making the point that a lot of schools and a lot of institutions are feeling these cuts in Indian country right now. In fact, there are a number of papers have covered the fact that, for example, there's a school system in Montana where a number of the children have been suffering with mental health issues. There were 5 children recently committed suicide in a single year. 20 more made the attempt. And this particular school wanted to hire a second counselor but couldn't do it because of sequestration. Why is it, and Lacey, I'm asking you this question, why is it that these cuts are being felt now in Indian country as opposed to in the rest of the world and the rest of the country where there seems to be a delayed effect?
Well, the cuts are being felt now because we're talking about, you know, the neediest people, you know, receiving some of these, receiving these services. And should the sequestration of federal funds to the Cherokee Nation stand, you know, over time, we will see such a great reduction in services, you know, over the 10 years that sequestration is in law, you know, that you know, we're in a position now where we may not recover from that.
Amber, before we let you go, and I understand that this is, you may consider this beyond your scope of responsibility, but there are critics who say that, you know, sequestration is hurting everybody and that Indian country can't be exempt from this shared sacrifice. What do you say to that?
Well, we agree with many of the policies, bipartisan principles that deficit reduction shouldn't increase hardship for the neediest and the most vulnerable. And it should honor the promises that we've made to our nation already, whether that's children or elders. And also, we should add, in Indian country, these were contracts signed with between our ancestors and the U.S. government. And it is critical to the well-being of our children, our elders, and coming generations to honor those promises and acknowledge that although they're in the discretionary side of the budget, they should be fulfilled because these are solemn agreements made between tribes and the U.S. government.
Amber Ebarb is a budget and policy analyst for the National Congress of American Indian. She's also a member of the Tlingit Nation of Alaska. She was kind enough to join us in our Washington, D.C. studios. Lacey Horn is the treasurer of the Cherokee Nation. She was kind enough to join us from Tahlequah, Oklahoma. Thank you both so much for speaking with us. Please do keep us posted.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just ahead, the unemployment rate is hovering right around 8%, but millions of those people probably are working just under the radar.
I have done freelance graphic design. I've also been a substitute teacher. I work 2 nights a week as a trivia DJ. At any given time, I might have 3-4 things going on.
We head to our Money Coach segment to find out more about the so-called shadow economy. That's coming up on Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.